Acts 15:36 is what that video clip reminds me of. Let us go again. Let us return and visit the brethren in every city in which we have preached the word of the Lord and see how they do. The Greek word is skeptomai, from where we get the word skeptic. They weren't going just to have coffee. They were going to check some things out. And Mutu, I want to commend you for your travel all these years and all that you've done. It's certainly paid off. Report to Africa Partners on what Noel Awar and I have been doing in the area of helping the staff with fundraising. In 2005, Noel came to my office. I'd never met him before. I was sitting there minding my own business and knock on the cubicle door, and this big African guy is there, and I said, yes. And he said, are you the man who wrote this book? My fundraising book called Fund Your Ministry Whether You're Gifted or Not. I said, well, yes, I am. He said, we need to talk. And so for the next 2.5 hours, Noel and I went to the flip chart, drew a map of Africa, and talked about the funding in Africa. But let me go back to 1983, when Elm and I were in Minneapolis with the Navigators as Upper Midwest director. I was having a day alone with the Lord in the Minneapolis Public Library. And I thought, what am I going to do? I felt like my time in the Upper Midwest was coming to an end, and what am I going to do next? And I jotted down a phrase to bring the Navigators around the world, kicking and screaming, into biblical fundraising. Now, I crossed out the hostility. But let me take you back now further yet, from 2005 to 1983 to 1971, before some of your parents were born. So back to 1971, we had just joined the staff of the Navigators. I'd come out of business and went to Iowa City. The students were coming to Christ. This was the days of the big hair hippie guys, and it was exciting. And there was so many new believers, and I was alone in the work, and so I quit my job at the newspaper cold turkey to be full-time in the ministry. Of course, we all know what that word full-time means. We're all full-time. Took my boss out to lunch. We went to Lum's Wiener Bar for lunch. Fine place. And I told him I was going to be quitting. He said, how are you going to support yourself? I said, not to worry, God would provide. And he just kept staring at me. And as he stared at me, I began to wonder if what I'd said was really true. My first fundraising appointment was at the home of two elderly blue-haired ladies from Ames, Iowa, who loved Elm and me. And I went in there with my fundraising book and pictures of all these hippies that had come to Christ. But as I went in the door, I noticed that the door was off the hinges and the carpet was worn and the sofa had a hole in it. And I thought, I can't ask these ladies for money. I should support them. But I'm going through my book and we're having a good time and they're nodding and I'm getting closer to the last page where the money is. And I began to sweat and I thought, man, I can't turn the last page. And then finally, a verse of Scripture came to mind that solved the problem for me. And it's where Jesus said to the Pharisees, you devourers of widows' houses. I closed my book and I asked for prayer. Now, I'm telling you this as part of my story so that you know this is what every Navigator staff goes through around the world when they decide that it's time to do vocational Christian work, that is to be full-time and be supported by gift income, GIP, gift income people, we call them. And I went through that struggle and didn't know what to do. Finally, the woman that I was living with at the time, who I'm also married to, we've lived together for 46 years now, asked me a question. We couldn't pay our bills. Helma took care of the checkbook in those days. She was good at it, much better than I. We couldn't pay our bills. And she said to me one day, are you going to support this family or not? And that was the day of truth. I realized that I was spiritualizing the whole issue of fundraising and the whole issue of money. God will provide. Let's go back still further to Dawson Trotman, the founder of the Navigators. Dawson Trotman did not care for fundraising. His only fundraising call that we know of was recorded with Mrs. Kerr of the Kerr Glass Jar Company. Now, Dawson had taken up the view of Hudson Taylor and George Mueller, you know those names, who had said, tell God only, don't talk to people. That was the view. And that was the view of many evangelical organizations that came out of the 30s and 40s in California. So Dawson had the view that we could talk only to God and God would provide. And there were a lot of miracles in Dawson's life. I admire him greatly. One day he was late for a meeting. He had to catch the streetcar in Los Angeles to get to a meeting. But someone stopped him on the road. He didn't have time to go home and get money or to find money for the streetcar. And he was stopping, talking to this person, being kind to them. And then said, I got to go. Ran out the door knowing he had no money for that streetcar. It was to cost 25 cents. On the way out to the streetcar, he met still another person who said, hey, Doss, how are you? Stuck out his hand to shake hands. Dawson shook his hand as he's racing by, and the guy gave him 25 cents for the street. Didn't know he's going to the street. He's just 25 cents right there. Now, these miracles happened all the time with Dawson. But they did not happen with many others after Dawson. I felt unspiritual. I thought, why can't this happen? Like, why didn't it happen to Alma and me like it happened to George Moon? Now, there were times I would come home from campus, and there would be a $20 bill stuck in my Bible. So I'd show this to Alma. Alma, look, God is providing. She said, thank you very much. The rent is $200. So we had spiritualized the topic of fundraising. Now, I'm telling you that because around the world, as I talk with our navigators from every culture, everybody has some stories like this. We struggle. Why can't we just, where he guides, he provides. Have you heard that half-truth? God's will done in God's way never lacks God's supply. Have you heard that half-truth?
Yes.
These are all half-truths. There's something good about it, but there's something also missing. That's how it began. I did not intend to go into fundraising. I did not intend to move to Colorado Springs, where the whales go to die. Ever seen anybody come out of Colorado Springs? I rest my case. The whales. Nobody ever leaves there, huh? So we didn't want to go. And if one of your kids or grandkids said they want to be a fundraiser when they grew up, what would you say to them?
Start now.
Yeah, you would say you have maybe special schooling or something, but you wouldn't encourage them. So God called me to this. So I started doing seminars around the Midwest. I finally did a Bible study. Alma's question led me to the Bible. It had come to that. So I opened the Bible with a blank sheet of paper and a ballpoint pen in Madison, Wisconsin, and said, God, what does the Bible say about money and fundraising? I didn't know what to do. And there was no other help. There were no training sessions. The advice I got from many NAV staff, I don't say this critically, this is just the facts, was try to be a conference offering project. Well, I was 14th in line behind all the guys going overseas. And then also, well, just trust the Lord. And then also, the people you've ministered to in the past will now come and support you. Galatians 6:6. Well, I'd ministered to two or three people in the past. And I was married. I didn't come on the campus as a single. I didn't have a big former ministry. It wasn't working. So the Bible pointed out where I was making mistakes. And it wasn't my techniques. I thought it was going to be about a few things you can say that suddenly everything goes well. It was up here. It was my head and my heart. I was wrong. So I started in Philippians chapter 4, and I titled my study, Giving from a Receiving Point of View. And that's how it began. So I'm here today because of a question from this woman, with whom I've been happily married for 46 years. So back to 2010, or 2005, Noel comes to my office, and now I've been to Africa 10 times. And to Japan and around the world. So in 2010, I began my role as international funding coach. It's a new job that's not been done in the Navigators before. Okay, so what are Noel and I trying to do? We have this mission statement. It's up for review, but we tried to put it into these words. Under the Navigators' official calling, our mission is to bring financial hope and success to the Navigators of Africa by empowering them to fully fund their ministries with biblical conviction, competence, and courage. I've underlined the word hope. As I think of Steve, Juan Zhao said to Steve, we want you to be a hope planter. Many of our staff in Africa have no hope financially. It's just 490 staff at the last count. Are they all going to come to America and get money? No. It's not going to work. They'd have to buy it. I suggested to Noel that they buy a jumbo jet and go back and forth weekly to your church. That's not going to work. Hope, success. I like the word success because you can't eat hope. You can't cook hope. We can't make promises and say the money's coming, the money's coming. No, there has to be some success. Well, there has to be some money. Empowering them. It's not a matter of giving money or saying, here's a bunch of money. America can give a bunch of money. America should give money. We've got plenty of money. But I don't think that's the solution. Empowering them to fully fund. Now, the word fully fund is a moving target, but fully fund based on some budget that has been approved by a board or by the supervisors. And I always ask the Navigator staff, the men, I say, so this is your budget? Yeah, that's our budget. Is it adequate? Oh, plenty adequate. I said, let's talk to your wife about whether it's adequate or not. Well, she'd be busy right now. We don't know where she went. You have to talk to the woman to get truth about money. The men will lie, and they know they're lying, and they do it with a smile on their face. I'm talking about Americans, Africans, Japanese, Malaysians. There's something in us men that we don't want to admit we have a vulnerability here in the area of money. But we do. So fully fund, not partially fund. Who said yesterday, Mutua, that some of the staff are just getting by? Is that our goal, to get by financially? Those that are conventional income people, CIPs, if you said to your wife, you know, honey, our goal is to get by financially, I think she'd have a question about that. We want to thrive financially. The goal is not to be rich, but the goal is to fully fund our ministry so we can do all God has called us to do. Fully fund our ministry with biblical conviction. Biblical conviction. Early on, it was this book that changed me. There's only about 20 key verses on the whole area of fundraising, these 20. It changed radically everything I was doing in the area of money. Biblical convictions. There's plenty of books you can buy on money. There's books on how to have a church campaign, all kinds of stuff. The world has all kinds of wisdom on fundraising. But what does the Bible say? Biblical conviction. Competence and courage. And Noel and I, it's not written down here, but Noel and I are saying, and it happens from Africa. The money comes from Africa. We're not training Africans to come to America to take every last dime out of your church. The money can come from Africa. There is money in Africa, as Bruce Van Wyk told me many years ago. Now, this looks like a seminar, and Noel and I do a lot of seminars, but it's actually, I think, as Mutu would say, it's a whole new way of thinking about ministry. It's not just a seminar, thank God that's over, now we can go back to life as normal. No, it's a new way of thinking, because just the seminar will not get anybody up to funding. Do you know the story? I should have said it during the history, but Dawson Trotman did not want to raise money, but the early Navigators kept running out of money in California. And he didn't know what to do, so they would sell a property that they owned. That would be okay for a while. But when the sailors went home from the war, the problem arose. So some businessmen said to Dawson, we think you should talk to people. Dawson wouldn't hear of it. But they pointed out 1 Kings 17, the story about Elijah being by the brook Cherith and being fed by ravens. And that worked well for a while. Now, I'm a bird watcher, so I happen to know what ravens eat. Would anyone here like to have a breakfast supplied by ravens? It would be a step of faith to eat what a raven would bring by. And then it said that the brook dried up. And in everybody's life, in every navigator's life, I know the brook is going to dry up sooner or later. There are miraculous raven-like happening. Some people live that way for a while, but sooner or later the brook dries up. Then he was told to go to the widow of Zarephath, which is outside Jewish territory. So here's the bold prophet of God going to a woman outside, a Gentile woman, to ask for a meal. And you know the rest of the story. So Dawson read that story and he applied it literally. He found a widow named Mrs. Kerr. K-E-R-R, the Kerr Glass Jar Company. You've seen, though, your parents have those down the basement of the Kerr Glass Jars. She knew the navigators, knew Dawson. Dawson went to her and asked for help. And as he began to ask for help, a little tear trickled down Mrs. Kerr's cheek. And Dawson said, "Mrs. Kerr, I'm sorry. I've offended you. I take it all back." She said, "Dawson, these are tears of joy to think that one such as I could support the work of the navigators. I didn't know you had any needs. I thought you were funded by some foundation or something." And then as Lauren Sandy tells the story, Mrs. Kerr said, "How much would you like?" And Dawson said, "Oh, it doesn't matter." So she got out her checkbook and said, "How much would you like?" He said, "Whatever you think." She said, "Give me a figure." And Dawson said, "How about $1,000? That was fine. She tore off the check and said, "There, was that so hard?" Now, we don't know if that last statement is exactly true. I'm trying to verify it through Jim Downing and others, but that's the story as Rod Sargent told it to me before he died. So this was difficult for Dawson. We don't know if he ever did this again. But that's some of our history. Okay, what problems are we trying to solve? I've got four listed down here. There may be more, but one is the problem of hopelessness. Many of our navigator staff, not just in Africa, but around the world, including America, the idea of financial stability or thriving is just hopeless. You think that we can be fully funded from Africa? Noel has called fundraising the Goliath that the African staff face. And no one will go up and stand face to face with this Goliath. The second problem we're trying to solve is many feel like second-class citizens because they're not pastors of a church. The pastors say, "Bring ye all the tithe into the church house." The Malachi word is storehouse, but the pastors say church house. And test me now on this. If you don't have a church, then you're not really legal to get the money. And so many of our NAV staff feel like second-class citizens. And it doesn't help when a well-meaning relative will say, "Why don't you get a real job?" Just about around the world, I've said to navigator staff, has anyone ever had this said to him? It's almost unanimous. Anybody who's in full-time work has had some comment like that said to them. Chris Omulo walked away from a veterinarian job, good job, and his fellow veterinarians, one guy said, went like this, and walked away from Chris when he heard the news that he was going to. Noel O'Hara's father-in-law said, "You're the best and the brightest of Africa. How can you join the navigators and do mission work when Africa needs you so desperately?" Those are hard issues. The third problem we're trying to solve is some of the ministries are topping out. Now, Mutua could fill us in more on this, but from what I understand, some of the ministries have been growing, but now they're beginning not to grow so fast anymore or actually decelerate because there's nobody there who's has the time and the capacity and the energy to supervise, to shepherd, to plan, just to think. Now, I can identify this, and I'm sure you can too. When I was in business, I had a ministry going on the side on the University of Missouri campus, and a lot of people came to the Lord, which was great. And I ran out of time. I was working 50 hours a week in my job, maybe more, and then going and two little kids, and trying to go to campus evenings and weekends and bring the students over. And I ran out of time. And many of the staff in Africa are running out of time. And then finally, the fourth problem we're trying to solve is 60% is not enough. That's one of Noel O'Hara's speeches. He stands before the staff and said, if you have a get-by mentality, that has to end. 60% is not enough. And the women are going, yes, yes. All for what? To better advance the gospel. I like what Noel says. Fundraising is a gospel issue. Fundraising is a gospel issue. And I think also we want to restore the dignity of our staff because many of them feel like it's hopeless. We ask four questions, Noel and I do, in all the training that we do. Is it biblical? Is our training biblical? Number two, is it effective? Is it effective? Oftentimes we go to seminars and think, well, try this, try this, try this. Well, does it work? We don't know, but try this. It's got to raise some money. Number three, is it culturally acceptable? Is it culturally acceptable? We can't just take what is done in America or the West, superimpose it, and hope that it works. And then fourthly, is it reproducible? What about the Naphtalis and the Ians and the Corneliuses that are all coming behind? They can't come to America. How are they going to be funded? Okay, so that's a bit of a open, and we'll have time for questions in a minute. So let me quickly go through and tell a few stories. So this is where Noel and I have been teaching. And it's at the invitation of Mutua that I'm even gone. I've been to Africa 10 times, so of course I'm an expert on the whole thing. And it's been great. I have been well received and loved, and I hope I've loved back. So we've been to these countries. It's going the best in Kenya and Nigeria. Those are our biggest ministries. We've trained probably 30 or 40 staff in Kenya and probably 25 or 30 in Nigeria so far. Noel just got back from South Africa. He just got back from Zimbabwe. He went to see the national director there, Lloyd, for almost a week. Next Wednesday, I take off for Ghana. And Noel will join me in Ghana. We'll be there for 3 days, 4 days, and then to Nigeria for our third trip to Nigeria. Just a few photos of what it's like. This is one of the things that happens. This is Bible study. Noel has developed the Zarephath solution. It's a Bible study on fundraising, what the Bible says about fundraising, and then some on money. Some of it's derived from what I did in America after Alma first asked me the question. But Noel wants to have a study that is African, that looks African, smells African. And this Zarephath study's got a good start on it. I really like it. It's taken from the widow of Zarephath. Some of the questions we ask. Was Jesus poor or rich? If rich, how rich? If poor, how poor? Has some good discussion on that. Another question is fundraising the same as begging? Because many people come into that view that there's even some of the old missionary books refer to fundraising as begging or holy begging. It's just wrong. But that's one of the things we talk about. What about the George Mueller method? What about telling no one? Is it right to make an appeal? And then is it right to suggest a range for people to give? I'll just give you a little clue on that. Moses did. Moses was 40 days with the Lord on Sinai, came down from the mountain. First thing he said, we're going to have a fundraising project. I think if I had been a Jew, I'd have said, you were 40 days with the Lord, that's the best you got? I'm supposed to give the stuff I brought from Egypt. We don't have any more resources. We're not farmers here. So you want me to give what I brought from? Yes. And then he listed 14 items that they needed. He gave them an idea what they could give that would really help. Interesting study. Okay, next slide. We like to get the leaders involved. This is Zach from Nigeria. And look at him. Zach is bold and confident, and he's a great guy. So he's involved. Now, sometimes in other places of the world, I'll not mention any names except the United States, sometimes the leaders don't come to the fundraising schools. They send the staff. But the leaders don't come. Mutua came. Stephanie came. Zach came. Stanley McCauley came. That's impressive. And they're with the students right along. Now, you can see here that they're doing a role play. Back to back on telephoning for skills. Zach is a humble man. I have the highest respect for him. Okay, next slide. This is Noel teaching in Ivory Coast, and this is a teaching strategy. It's Noel teaching, not me. Now, when Noel and I first started, it was Scott and Noel. Now it's Noel and Scott. I love this. I don't need to be there. Noel can carry this ball. But I go because he does want encouragement, and we're trying to develop others who can teach and coach. We'd like to see a Noel in every country, every established country, every country where we have a thriving ministry. Okay, next one. role plays. A lot of ministry has to do with skills, as you know. People that are skilled in evangelism lead more people to Christ than those that aren't, generally. People that are skilled in leading a Bible study usually have better results than those that aren't. So some of it is skills, and so we teach skills. So this is, I think, Jeremy in Ivory Coast, back-to-back, working on simple skills. Now, skills aren't everything, but you know yourself that when you know how to present the gospel and you're confident about it, then instead of worrying about what you're going to say, you can think about the other person. Same in fundraising. When a person is skillful, same in sales. There's some similarities. Okay, next slide. One of the things we do, we tell the staff, okay, next 2 days from now at 4:00 in the afternoon, we're going to get on the phones and we're going to call our friends and we're going to ask for an appointment to talk to talk about money. And we're not going to do it in a voice higher than Mickey Mouse's. We're going to have confidence. And so the Nigerian said, Scott, when you told us that, our stomachs began to jump. So that puts new impetus. We got 48 hours to get ready for the phone call at 4 p.m. So 4 p.m. came on this first day in Kenya. At 4 p.m. we had prayer. We had practice. Everybody had their list. They ever had cell phones. We bought airtime. I'd love to do that. I don't have any airtime. So Noel had sent someone out with airtime cards, 120 minutes. One guy said, my phone exploded. It never had 120 minutes. So there's no excuse. You can't call your mom. And so they stall around. But this day they disappeared at 4:00. Everybody disappeared. I thought, man, they've gone home. They got mad. And then gradually they started coming back on the lawn at the Nairobi headquarters here. You can see them in the background phoning. And it was working. And, you know, they're gesticulating and talking, and it went really well. So Noel and I were happy we had this picture taken. And here's what Noel said. He says, Scott and I think the same about fundraising. We think the same about donor ministry. And we wear the same clothes. Only our mothers could tell us apart. Now, that's great. Are there results? Let's look at these results in Kenya. This is 2006. We began the training in late 2006 and then each year since. So shillings, 653, 982, and finally 2011. This is average per month. Average per month. So you can see 653. But we've also increased some staff, number of staff accounts. And I'm trying to help all the national directors around the world. Don't think in terms of number of bodies of staff, because do you count wives? Do you not count wives? All that. Yeah, of course you have to count wives. They're doing ministry, but that's one account. So when we say how many staff accounts that raise money, that is a common denominator. But look, we've increased. So let's do it without new staff. So 653, 1.5 million shillings average per month. 2.4 times increase. Thanks to the Lord. He did that. And Stanley, thanks to Stanley McCallway for having his staff find a baseline so that we can compare. Now, Mutua yesterday said we're not about numbers, and we certainly aren't. But without that baseline, without this stuff, all I could give you is anecdotal reports. And anecdotal reports are not enough. We're not about numbers in the Navigators, but God is interested in numbers, is he not? He wants everybody saved. Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, numbers. But we have to use numbers in the right way. If numbers become an end, like Mutu said yesterday, then we are dead. But numbers, we have to measure something or we can't manage it. So especially in fundraising. Otherwise, it's anecdotal evidence. I tell our staff, reports are the truth serum of fundraising. We'll go to a guy, how's your fundraising going? Oh, great, great, praise the Lord. Talk to the wife, how's the fundraising going? Woo! Big difference. We have to have some numbers so that we can document what's been going on, what's not going on. This is a major thing to give thanks to the Lord for. Now, it's more than doubled. But we have had 6 seminars in Kenya. 6, more than one a year. I haven't been there each time, but sometimes it's been just a small group, sometimes it's been a big deal, and this September we'll do it again. Stanley McCallway is committed, and we have reports that are due every month in Kenya. Well, Scott, that seems rather arbitrary and artificial. It is a little bit sometimes when the report gets. Stanley says your report is due. We say your report is due in the end of the month at midnight, not 12:01, not 12:02. It's due at midnight, the end of the month. The Africans smile and they turn the report in. So this reporting is good for a time. It may not need to last forever, but it needs to be now. Okay. Questions, comments?
Where are you finding it most difficult? Most challenging? Either, well, first with staff resistance, and secondly with their success in.
Where is it most difficult? Well, I'll give you the answer, but you have to promise not to tell anybody. This is a secret. It's most difficult in the United Kingdom. Now, it's going to win there because the national director said that we are going to go this way. But in terms of resistance, much more resistance in the United Kingdom and some places in the West rather than much more than Africa. One of the Nigerian donors told Zach, he said, Zach, why didn't you talk to me years ago? I didn't know you were funded. You were funded in this way. Why didn't you talk to me years ago? And Zach came into the room almost weeping. He said, I'm late. I'm 5 years too late with this guy. And that's the case oftentimes. What we found so far is people just don't know how the navigators are supported, and so they're willing to give. They just have never realized this is how it is. So that's been in general the response.
Thanks for throwing a word here. Some of you may be wondering why Scott's here talking about funding when we're talking about Africa. Probably should have prefaced this beforehand, because this is a large part of the ministry in Africa. If this doesn't happen, it's a stranglehold on everything that's trying to happen in Africa. And I would like, before we're done, for Mutua to say a little bit about his concern about the staff and longevity and how funding plays into the gospel in Africa. Okay? I know this has been on your heart. So this is just for your general education. Otherwise, if you don't understand this component, you're missing a large part of what we're doing, what we're trying to do, and how we can go forward.
Thank you. That was my conclusion. Well said. You need to understand enough about fundraising so that you can give wise counsel, because you'll be asked questions. And oftentimes, without a background, we're going to give wrong answers. I think Ed, and then...
Just to follow up on your Kenya story here, that bottom line there, then, is there a goal? How close is there?
A good question. This probably needs to double again. That's how low the staff were. Many were at 20 or 30% of budget. And getting by. But their wives are working. And I say, does your wife want to work? Oh, she loves it. Let's go talk to the wife. Well, she's out now. So sometimes the wives want to work. Oftentimes they don't, or they don't want to work so many hours. One of my old nav friends says, every navigator staff has a bypass system to avoid pain. So it's a wife working. It's a little outside job. It's some investment income left by the parents, which was supposed to be for retirement, but isn't going to go to retirement. There's always a little thing. And I'm saying, let's deal with this, and let's call it what it is, and say, is there enough money to fund the missionaries of the world? Absolutely. Let's go after it. Yeah. Stan.
When will they be fully funded in Nigeria?
What's that?
When will they be fully funded in Nigeria?
Nigeria's... Maybe Mutua can help me, but I can't get a baseline from Nigeria.
You can.
I can't. I've tried, I've asked, but Zach's a bigger man than I am, so I got to get a baseline or we won't know even the answer to that question. But now, yeah, we're working. They have the technology, they've got the data, it's all in their system, but they've had a lot of problems in Nigeria, as you know, lately. So we have to get the baseline. So we can't even answer. But anecdotally, Nigeria's gone very well. Another thing we do is yes rate. When you go to talk to someone face to face, you could do this in sales too. How many yeses are you getting as opposed to noes? And we do yes rate monthly and yes rate cash. Yes rate monthly is what we want. In America, we're getting yes about 45 or 50% in America. When you go to a friend, talk to him face-to-face, invite him to give him a pledge card, half the time they'll say yes to something, maybe $50 to $100 a month. And I thought, okay, in Africa, that's going to go way down. In Africa, it's just as high. The yes rate is 50%. And then another 25 or 30% say yes to cash. So it's 70 or 80% are saying yes when our staff go face to face. Now that's the easy fruit because they've never been asked. Actually, in Japan, it's almost 80%.
Really?
Almost.
It has to be
face to face. It's face to face. In group meetings or letters, you're not going to get that response. So things have gone very well in Nigeria, but in Nigeria also we're finding that people oftentimes think that, yeah, I'll help you out. So they'll give a cash gift, but they didn't realize it's supposed to be ongoing. So the hard thing in Nigeria is to get monthly support, which is a commitment rather than just, yeah, I'll bail you out. And that's one of the things we're really trying to help the staff with. We're not asking people to bail us out. As Noel says it, we are not asking you to supply school fees and chewing gum. We are asking you for a commitment to join this ministry so we can reach Africa. So fundraising is not begging. In fundraising, see, begging is horizontal. I go to Steve and I say, Steve, I'm in trouble. Can you help me out? So his pocket to my pocket. That's horizontal fundraising. A lot of organizations do that. We say fundraising is biblical, is vertical. We're asking you, in fact, we say it this way, may I ask you to pray about joining our team with a monthly gift of $50 to $100 per month as the Lord leads, and then stop. Because now we're helping them to see, wait, they're going to make a decision, a stewardship decision with God's money. Now, you know, I happen to benefit, or the Noel happens to benefit from it, but we're helping them this with this. And the proof text there, if I had to have a proof text, would be Numbers 18:21, where it says the tithe was given by God to the Jews. It came from heaven, and the giving of the tithe was given to God. And we can see Paul echoing that. It's hidden all throughout the scriptures that giving is to God. Not horizontal. Therefore, receiving has to be from God. That changes everything. Then it's fundraising. It's no longer begging. If fundraising was begging, I would not be here. Okay, there was,
Go ahead. Ron, I would just say something. Just one question. Do you go to the secular people as well as believers or strictly to believers?
Do we go to believers or now also non-believers? The scriptures seem to indicate that you could go to non-believers. When Nehemiah went to the king to ask for a huge gift, was King Artaxerxes the long-handed? One of Artaxerxes' hands was longer than the other, but you dare not laugh about it. He was a non-believer. Didn't believe in the Jewish God. Cornelius gave alms as a non-believer. But the thrust of Scripture seems to be to go to the believers. 3 John 8, these went out for the sake of the name, not accepting anything from the Gentiles. So we don't want to trust the Gentiles for the support the work of God. But I think also going to the Gentiles will allow them to, I think it's an opportunity to advance the gospel. So we tell them, yes, be careful. I like to say to my non-Christian, if I know they are non-Christian, let me tell you what we share with those students on campus. So it's an opportunity for the gospel. Mutua, a question, comment about... anything I've said or you want to contradict or correct or dispute?
I think that there are major, as Noel said, this is a gospel issue. And it's especially a matter of concern where we have had ministries closed down because of money. People who came on and then they could not stay full time, quote unquote. And yet they went back to their jobs, not because they had a calling to the job. They really wanted to be going to the campus and so on. Les Johnston came out to visit, and remember he's sitting on our veranda, and you were almost crying, and you said, what's happened to KUC? Because that's where we minister together. And for a number of years, the ministry had closed down because the staff that were there just could no longer be supported. So there are people that were coming to Christ, a very fruitful ministry, and just because we had not addressed issues of funding, we had to close down those ministries. And it seemed like we were elevating money to the wrong place by saying money can actually stop ministry. So I would say this actually places money its rightful place. It's a servant of the movement of the gospel, as opposed to where, by not addressing it, it becomes strong enough to actually block the advance of the gospel.
Okay, other comments, questions? Good question.
Give because you want this to be raised in Africa, and then we become somewhat
handout. Yeah. Right. So, what do you do with this information? Good question. I'm not asking you to give. If I was asking you to give, there'd be pledge cards. We'd be on our knees praying, and you would understand. You'd be asking to give. In South Africa, Manfred had a bunch of young 20-somethings together all working in business, and about 50 of them. And I was supposed to talk about budgeting. And they were all there, and I said, today we're going to talk about money. And they all went, but we're not going to take an offering. Yay! It's unbelievable. They couldn't believe we were going to talk about money and not take an offering. That's an unusual thing in most cultures. So what do with it? I think, number one, understand that biblical fundraising is important and biblical. It was one of Mutua's six things on his transformation chart last night. Did you notice that? The paradigm, changing the paradigm of fundraising, of money, of resources. So number one, we have to believe that fundraising, the money stuff, is just as valid as prayer, as feeding the poor, as Bible study. Do you believe that? Biblical fundraising is just as valid as prayer. Now, oftentimes, historically, the way we've looked at it is that we've got, let's say, evangelism. That's important. This is importance. Evangelism is important. Discipling, boy, that's important. Prayer, yes, prayer is important. Economic development, yeah, absolutely. Whole life, absolutely. What about equipping? Yes. And money and fundraising and communication and admin are down here. That's the history of the Navigators, I'm afraid. And maybe the history of some of evangelicalism. I hope I'm not being too critical. Now, what I'm going to say to you, let's put fundraising up just as important as everything else. Biblical fundraising and donor ministry. Communication, the same. Admin, the same. Henry Nouwen said it this way. Henry Nouwen. We know Henry Nouwen, the Catholic guy. Good writer, man of God, said that biblical fundraising is just as important as feeding the poor, as a prayer meeting, or doing other kinds of ministry. When I read that, I had tears in my eyes because I always believed that but never had the guts to say it. I got the guts today. It is. So, therefore, what we teach the Africans and what Noel and I do, I showed you my prayer journal yesterterday, which I sometimes use every day and sometimes I don't. But on page one, under the three praises, two confessions, and three thanks, a little while down, I have daily bread. Jesus said in the Lord's Prayer, give us this day our daily bread. A better navigator asked me one time, do you pray about your finances every day? Well, no, I don't. Well, why not? I don't know. So I say, Lord, my budget, and I name the amount of my personal budget, I name the amount of the IO budget, I name the Glenary budget, I name these budgets, the total amount. Say, Lord, today give us our daily bread for these ministries. And so the Africans are starting to do this now. I can say that to you too, because Jesus' prayer was not just for full-time Christian workers. If you're in business, I believe you need to pray every day about your daily bread. Lord, today, would you bring the business we need? Would you bring the clients? Would you bring the customers? Would you allow me to serve them today? Yeah, absolutely. We all We all live by faith, don't we? There's no telling your company's not going to have its door closed Monday morning when you go back. We all live by faith. So then on the next page, I've listed the names of those I'm going to talk to. And I put an amount behind their name. Your name's not on here, Paul. Relax. But yours is, Stan. So put an amount behind their name. Sometimes it's $50 a month. Sometimes it's $5,000 a year or more. So then when I call people, they say, Scott, it's amazing that you called today because we were just thinking about you last week. How you been doing? That happens too much for it to be a coincidence. And the Africans are finding the same thing. So that's how we start. It's got to be biblical. Okay, so what to do? Number one, believe that it is biblical. Number two, I'd recommend you do a short study on fundraising from the Bible. So that because you get asked questions by staff. So here's your assignment for verses. It's just about six verses. Luke 8, 1 to 3. Matthew 10, 1 to 15. And compare that with Luke 22, 35 to 38. Nehemiah 1, 2. Romans 15, 20 to 24. Luke 21, 1 to 4, the widow. And then Malachi 3, 10 and 1, 8. This whole idea of tithing, that is huge in Africa. And how much are we supposed to give today? Americans say 10% to the church and gifts and offerings to everybody else if you can afford it. I said, where'd you get that idea? This is a guy in Minneapolis. He said, that's what the Bible says. I said, the Bible says nothing of the kind. You don't have to tithe. You don't have to tithe. That's an Old Testament teaching.
By the way, Scott, I'm going to ask you that because I've studied that.
Yeah.
I've been talking to people about the tithe and say, so you're tithe. They go, yes, you have to tithe. Well, Deuteronomy says every third year the entire tithe is to go to widows and the poor. So if you have a tithe, and every third year, I want to say,
amen. Amen. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so this.
I think it's Deuteronomy 24. I'm sorry.
Yeah, just taking the word tithe in your concordance and running through a dozen or so references will reveal that there's some, if you're going to do it, it's complicated. I think this would be enough. Philippians 4, 10 to 20. Just start there. Let me encourage you to, this is professional development for Africa Partners. We need to know these passages. And then, of course, you could buy a fine book written by a very talented writer called Funding Your Ministry at napress.com. If you're really desperate.